Call the Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February the 9th, 2005. It's now 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, and I apologize for everyone for the delay. Got wrapped around an axle that we couldn't avoid. Senator French is with us, Senator Terrio, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Seekins. Is Senator Guess online with us this morning? Nope. She's still excused. And we're going to resume with SJR 1. This morning, Senator Dyson, thank you for being with us, and I see you've brought Mr. Schultz with you again today.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
SJR 1, could we just take final action on CS?
Would you excuse us for just 1 second, gentlemen? Let's take a look at a CS here. I do see we have some other folks waiting. If we can just go out of order on Senate Bill 36 for 1 second, I think we can resolve that matter and get more deeply in our discussion. Senator Terrio, you have a CS for us this morning?
Yes. It's the same thing. Yeah, okay. It's the / I. Mr. Chairman, I would move that the committee take up the OCS for Senate Bill 36 / I dated 2805 as a working document.
Is there objection? Hearing none, can you explain the CS for us this morning?
Yes, on the first page, Mr. Chairman, on line 4, you see the words in person have been added. That was that was passed yesterday. And also the drafter felt that it was prudent then to put on line 5 under this section to make it very clear that we're talking about this section only. And then the other two areas that were in question were on page 3. The new language there in line 7 through 9 and then line 25. And it says that the fines are associated with a violation of 1520.081, which is, again, on the front page. And that would make it clear that it takes in a violation is if you distribute an application that it has not been approved, or if you collect or aggregate the applications and insert yourself in the as a middleman between the voter and the Division of Election. The fines would apply to both.
Is there comment from the division?
Mr. Chairman, Laura Glazer, Director, Division of Elections. Senator Terrio's staff shared this version with us, and we think it's great. It's fine.
Thank you. So this version, / I for India, is adopted by the committee. Is there further comment on the bill? Senator French.
Question. Yesterday we were looking the violation language, if you will, the lines 7 through 9 and at the end on page 3, referred specifically to one subsection of 1520.081, and that was J, the new section we've added. Today we've taken the J out apparently on purpose, and we're making it a crime to violate any part of that entire statute. Is that right? Is that what we intend?
Yes.
So just so I'm clear, I mean, the statute's page and a half long, and part of the statute says, for example, after receipt of an application, the director shall send the absentee ballot and other absentee voting material to the applicant by the most expeditious mail service. That would be a crime if that didn't happen? No, but wouldn't that be a violation?
I'm sure she would use the most expeditious.
I agree, and I don't have any reason to believe it wouldn't happen. But I want to make sure that that's the idea. The idea is to make basically every sentence in this statute, any violation of any sentence in the statute, Class A misdemeanor first time and a felony the second time.
If it was knowingly done, I think it would be a violation. If she knowingly did not do so, I think mens rea comes in there, doesn't it?
Always.
Yeah. So I think if we all think about it in terms of the word knowingly and willfully, she's violation. So is there further discussion?
Thank you. I'm still a little bit... I'm concerned about how a judge is going to look at this, because this is where, of course, criminal cases get played out. And I'm back on Section 3, the mainly the new subsection, subsection J. In subparagraph 2, it says that you must, the absentee ballot application form must conceal the personal information of the individual requesting delivery of an absentee ballot while on the application, et cetera, of the United Postal Service or other person delivering the application to the division. So that subsection sort of foresees other individuals who may bring the application to the division. And yet in the very next subsection, subsection 3, it says, must specify that the form is to be returned by the voter directly to the division and not to another person providing the form. I guess I'm trying to put myself in the place of a judge trying to figure out who it is that can handle these and who it is that can't. Because clearly, I think we all know what we're after, but I'm not sure if it's as clear as it can be who the people are that can get penalized for carrying absentee ballots and who it is that can't.
Senator French, through the chair, I wasn't part of the drafting, but perhaps the other person delivering the application. We get applications through Federal Express, DHL. That would be another form of service. And I believe what the sponsor was trying to get at was to make sure that, like the applications that the Democratic Party used, where all the information was wide open, that it be concealed, either folded over or in an envelope. And perhaps the other person, that would be the type of other person. I would see that. If you just say U.S. Postal Service, the other ways to deliver it directly to the division are via DHL, FedEx. Those are others.
Could I ask, if the information is appropriately concealed, if no one can see the information after the application has been completed, what difference does it make who delivers the application to the division as long as it's done expeditiously? I mean, it could be a Democrat, could be a Republican, could be an Independence Party candidate, could be a canvasser, could be anybody. But if the information's concealed and they can't see it, what difference does it make who brings it in?
Ms. Glazer? Question or Senator Trejo?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that I don't care if it's concealed in an envelope or not. I don't think that any organized party in the state of Alaska has any right to handle those ballots. You deliver them to the mail, or you take it to the division elections yourself. You don't deliver it to, you know, the Sierra Club, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. You know, we're trying to get all of those groups out of the flow of that ballot once it leaves the voters.
I think we could clearly say here, though, that we're not trying to make it a crime if it's going by FedEx or DHL or by some kind of recognized delivery service, nor if I hand it to my wife and say, please drop this off in the mail on your way to work today, that would not be a crime. But if it's delivered to a third party who then is in the, for the purpose, they're doing this for the purpose of trying to, who could possibly be using that information if they had access to it in a way that's outside of the intent of the legislation, then I have no problem with that. I hope that's where you're coming from, and you're not trying to advocate for giving it to the Sierra Club or the Democrat Party or anything else.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't agree with you more. But what this says is that if it was your wife that gave you the form, and if you turn around and give the form back to your wife, I think you've just violated subsection 3 of paragraph J.
Well, and in some respects, maybe. But if I read this section 3, here, Senator, bear with me, I'm not an attorney. It says, I cannot give it to another person providing the form.
If your wife gave it to you, and you give it back to your wife.
So in that respect, you know, I think what we're trying to do here is say, if someone's out recruiting, you can't give it back to them. I don't know how far we have to go with the intent on this, but I think that's the intent, is it not, Senator Terrio?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And if Senator French has a suggestion on exactly how to open up a loophole to let Connie Seekins deliver it to the mailbox.
Which she would probably have to, because I'd lose it.
Throwing it open for every other, you know, group that has an agenda in the state of Alaska, fine. But absent that, you know, suggestion of that wording, I feel comfortable leaving it up to general prosecutorial discretion, that nobody's going to level or bring be successful in bringing charges against Connie Seekins, but they are going to have the law on the books to bring charges against the Sierra Club.
You won't bust.
Yeah, I don't think you'd prosecute my wife for delivering it, would you,
Mr. Chairman?
I wouldn't, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, neither would you. Yeah, and you having come from the prosecutors, having a son there, the workload's so high. I don't think that they think they'd laugh this one off if somebody tried to get them to. But go ahead, Senator Huggins.
Well, being the new guy here and somewhat innocent, but quite frankly,
and you're presumed innocent.
Grossly surprised. When I read the accounts of what went on this last election cycle, particularly in the state of Alaska. So in the respect that, you know, how some people can look and say, well, you know, we can get away with this, and I'm not trying to put words in their mouth, but the mentality, if we can shut off that mentality, good for us.
Mm-hmm. Is there further objection at this point? Have we covered this well enough? Is there further discussion by members of the committee? Hearing none. Is there an intent for this bill this morning? Senator Terrio.
I move the Judiciary CS of Senate Bill 36 from committee with individual recommendations and the zero fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Hearing none, this bill is passed on to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations. Thank you for very much. Mr. Schultz. Thank you, Senator, for your patience with us this morning.
Well, thank you for hearing our bill.
Bills. We're back on SJR 1. Senator Dyson, Mr. Schultz are with us this morning. Gentlemen, if you want to put yourself on the record, we'll resume the discussion.
As Senator Fred Dyson from Chugaki River.
And Lucky Schultz, staff to Senator Dyson.
We're at the point where we're discussing among the members the various provisions of this bill. Do we have any public testimony that signed up for it this morning? Is there anyone in the audience other than the gentlemen that are here that want to testify on the bill? Senator Dyson, you have the floor.
Well, yeah, and it's a policy question for you all. We would recommend that you accept our conceptual amendment number one here, and what it's kind of a little bit of cleanup, but what it takes is the base year back to the last one that we have good data on, including all the supplementals. So it's not current year's budget, it's the year previous, and we probably should have had that in the original draft, but makes it far more accurate, our calculations, because it is indeed what has been expended.
So just for clarification of the record, we're discussing proposed amendment A.1, dated 1-13-05?
It's a new one. It's
a new one, just coming out. That's why I wanted to make sure. I was
we
a little
adopted the other one yesterday. This
right, that's why I was a little confused. So,
This one would be,
if we're going to consider it, will be amendment number 2, we'd call it.
And then I have some comments about the questions that came up in yesterday's hearing, or was it whenever the last time we were together, and so on. But then you all, it seems to me most of the questions that will need to be answered about this bill are largely the numbers, and it'll be a decision of your committee whether or not to hold the bill here and get all those questions answered, or pass it on to finance and let them be dealt with there.
My intent, and I don't know what the rest of the committee's intent would be, is for us to take a look at those parts of the bill that we as a Judiciary Committee should take a look at and allow the Finance Committee to work on the numbers. That's my intent, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, and certainly the questions that came up our last time was, you know, I think maybe you raised it, Mr. Chairman, what about the anomalies we have in our budget cycle here having to do with financing the deficits from TERS, PERS. And we can explain to you and show you how the base numbers here for this and the next year have been adjusted upward with the best numbers we have to cover those. So, and we believe that that covers that in the out years. So we've adjusted up with an arbitrary number that should cover that.
So let's take a look at this proposed amendment, which is on page 1, lines 7 through 9. Conceptual amendment to reflect that the base year is the second fiscal year prior to the fiscal year being considered, as opposed to the immediate. So, shall not exceed the minimum of these. So we'd be looking at line 8, if I'm correct. And instead of the language saying, in the immediate preceding fiscal year, we would insert in there that the second, in the second fiscal year prior to the fiscal year being considered.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator French.
I think, I'm just wondering if we couldn't, because I know it's still conceptual, but it might be clear if we said the base year is the fiscal year 2 years prior to the fiscal year being considered, instead of second. That kind of throws me off. Is that what you're after, 2 years prior?
Okay, may not exceed the amount appropriated in the fiscal year two years preceding. The fiscal year under consideration. Is that kind of what we're doing?
Yes, ma'am.
So the base would be the fiscal year 2 years preceding the fiscal year under consideration.
If you're looking at 07, you use 05 as the base.
That's correct, sir.
Yep. So that's the year which we should have everything in.
Closed in, closed out.
You know what the supplements are.
Does everyone understand that conceptual amendment there? Is there discussion on that amendment? Is there the chair will propose the amendment for consideration. Is there objection? Hearing none, we will adopt amendment number 2. Allow that, so it will read that may not exceed the amount appropriated in the fiscal year 2 years prior to the fiscal year under consideration. Okay. Now, let's go on a little bit. If I could just divest, go back a little bit, even into what we did yesterday, in the amendment that we did. If I can look at the second page of the amendment we adopted yesterday, and we're talking about the legislature, upon the affirmative vote of at least 2/3 of the members of each House, adopt an appropriation that exceeds the limit under A of this section if the governor requests the appropriation in response to extraordinary circumstances. What if the legislature itself deems that there are extraordinary circumstances that need to be addressed that's outside of the governor's request? Have we thought about that?
Yes, sir, we did. We considered that last year. The question was brought up in the Finance Committee, and a clause was added said that the legislature could address extraordinary circumstances as well and bring the bill forward. I think there was quite a bit of debate. I don't know if there's a good answer for it last year. I think part of the question we ran into last year was the difficulty of having a body such as this defining extraordinary circumstance and left it with typically the governor is going to initiate these things. It's certainly an issue that we can put back in. It was there last year. We can certainly add it back in this year.
I'm just trying to foresee that there may be some tension between a governor's office and a legislature from time to time.
Hard to conceive.
Yeah, hard to conceive. But that I would kind of hate to say that this body, which does have some fiscal responsibility, should never be allowed to determine that there might be an overriding special circumstance that, for political reasons, a governor may not want to acknowledge. and
it was separation of powers argument.
Yeah. So I'm not wanting to give an already powerful governor too much power, especially in determining the needs of the people. Am I off base here? Discussion, anybody? Secretary?
So, you would just don't have a problem with the power granted to the governor there, but you'd just like to see balancing power.
Yes.
Granted to the legislature.
I would like to see that legislature also has some authority to try to determine among the body what is an extraordinary circumstance by a two-thirds vote, be able to address the same issue. I don't know what your gentleman's thoughts are on that.
Well, I was just thinking that the governor can call us back into special session, but he can't force us to make an appropriation.
Right.
That's the check and balance. We could call ourselves into
special session,
pass an appropriation, and the governor could veto it.
He could veto it. Yes.
Senator Dyson. The valid point that you're after, Mr. Chairman, is that if indeed we called ourselves back into special session, recognized that there was an extraordinary circumstances, i.e. the construction of the pipeline that a next governor might like, you know, and so on. Here's the language we had last year. If the legislature by law declares an extraordinary circumstance exists upon affirmative vote of two-thirds of the members of each house, the legislature may pass an appropriation that exceeds the appropriation limit under this section to address the extraordinary circumstances, notwithstanding Section 17 of Article 2. A bill declaring an extraordinary circumstance passed by the legislature may not become law unless signed by the governor. And there was an active discussion about what if the governor vetoes it. You know, then what do we have to have a three-quarter vote to overrule the governor?
They would have to override the veto, I think.
It certainly would be a very clear signal that the legislature disagrees with the governor's policy.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when you're faced with the option of a veto as a governor versus faced with the option of declaring an extraordinary circumstance, the cat's already out of the bag rather than just refusing to acknowledge it. You've said a body of legislators has determined there is an extraordinary circumstance here. And that puts a little different light on how he would consider it, I think, he or she.
Yeah. So I suspect we could do a conceptual amendment here on this language and give the drafters a shot at, you know, fitting it together.
I would feel much more comfortable adding that section back in. Discussion of the members?
Mr. Chairman, we don't, unless the Senator Dyson's got some language there specifically to consider, we can just ask him to work with the drafters and come back with a proposed CS.
Good. Mr. Schultz?
Mr. Chairman, there's one consideration here I think we might want to discuss before we go to that route, and it brought about quite a bit of discussion last year in this last sentence in this paragraph, and I'm not advocating for or against, but it's a decision that needs to be addressed. And that is, it says that if the legislature passes an appropriation for a special circumstance, that it cannot become law until signed by the governor, which is contrary to what we typically do, that says if the government doesn't sign it within 10 days, it becomes law. This says both parties have to agree. And that was a point of contention last year.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Mr. Schultz. I feel more comfortable that it would be subject to the same procedure that any other bill would be, that the governor either has to veto it or it becomes law, or he's even without his signature. I don't know. Any discussion on that point? Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I mean, why we would want to divert from normal precedents of how we process doesn't meet the so what test.
Mm-hmm. Senator French, did you
have go ahead.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. There is some reason for us to move this bill with some dispatch, because there's certainly, as we face our budget decisions in 6-7 weeks here, there are many folks who, including myself, will be reluctant to approve a budget without this provision. But I'm very respectful of the Constitution, and I think we need to be very careful when we are amending the Constitution. And a spending limit, I think, has lots of populist appeal to voters who may not have the chance to have as deliberative a process as we do. And those issues about the amending the Constitution and placing it before the people, you know, are very important and should be the purview of this committee. And one option that you could do is you could we could make a conceptual amendment based upon this discussion and so on. We get the language of it and the one you just passed and so on, and that we agree to ask the Senate President to give this an additional referral back to Judiciary after the Finance Committee has finished its work and all the language has been finalized.
I don't have any problem with that. I think this is the only conceptual problem that I had. Did other members anticipate further discussion on other points of the bill in the Judiciary Committee? So we can get it out of here by tomorrow, I think, if we could get just this section in. And I don't know if that would be necessary, Senator Dyson. We may want to take a look at it and see and request it to come back at a later date from the President. But I don't want to unnecessarily delay it either, and just for the to point to exert some kind of authority that isn't necessary.
and I appreciate that, but I am committing that if you make that choice, I will strongly support it, just because of how important I think it is that the constitutional issues, you know, and the whole idea of amending the Constitution is very, very important and ought not to be dealt with lightly.
Right. And if I can just give you just an example of why I was concerned about this provision, the point that Senator French makes and that many of us agree with is, okay, what do we do if we get into a big brouhaha? The Senator French says, well, I feel more comfortable if we withdrew from this the education budget. Well, what I'm saying is I believe that this body would never shortchange, you know, the kids that we needed to in the process of the education budget. But if we got into an argument where a governor said, no, I'm not going to give them that much, and you say we need it and it has to be done, that we do have that override system that also works within the normal course of how we'd act as a legislature. So that's the only concern I had, and once this is addressed, I'm willing to move the bill out to the Finance Committee. I don't know about the rest of the members, but that's so if we could maybe get this conceptual amendment taken care of, bring it back, since we do meet Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we have this scheduled to continue through the week, we could get this bill out of committee perhaps as early as tomorrow. I appreciate your assurance.
And we would be delighted to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
I owe it to you to say that I personally will always resist any of the state's responsibilities being carved out to be treated differently.
Yeah.
I agree that education is very important, but I personally will resist any group that has a reserved place at the trough and doesn't have to compete for the limited resources against
other
ones.
Yep.
And it's a tough call, and we all have our own sacred cows. Mine happens to be child protection. But and those will butt heads, and in my view, need to be all at the table competing for that limited resources.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. Competition breeds examination, and examination breeds excellence. And efficiencies. So I agree with that. So with your gentleman's approval, we'll go ahead and we'll ask that we get this amendment put in place. You guys understand the concept of what we're looking at, and we'll bring it back tomorrow. Now we move on to number four. It's your day still, Mr. Senator Dyson.
I don't think there's any more work that needs,
Answer questions.
Yeah, we'd be glad to answer questions about it.
Okay. We now are looking at Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. Discussion among the members.
There are important philosophical questions here, policy questions. Do we make, in those years, and hopefully there are many of them, when there is a, quote, excess of revenues, do we make repaying the CBR a priority and getting it up to some number? We've arbitrarily chosen $5 billion as a good number for the state's buffer fund, and I think there'll be some spirited discussion about the adequacy of that number, and maybe we will add an escalator to it.
That's the only question I had, is whether or not, when it goes in the Constitution, whether we freeze it for the next 20 years and have to have another amendment to the Constitution in order to escalate that number if we so desire, or whether there should be an escalator built into the question.
Yeah. And I expect we'll hear some excellent testimony from Revenue and others about what that number should be, probably as a percentage of either the state's total indebtedness or total gross product or total budget or the GF part of that budget.
I'm willing to let the Finance Committee work on that if our other members are.
Yeah.
So, Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I don't control like escalators. You know, I look at that as setting statutes on autopilot, and particularly with the Constitution. I understand there's the, on the spending side, what we're allowed to spend, you can't change the Constitution every other year to allow for the natural growth in the budget. So we've got to have something in there for that. But setting the buffer at $5 billion, which is roughly twice our current level of spending, should cover things and give us a good buffer out into the future. And then if it's workable, it's the buffer that people learn to utilize, I don't think there would be a lot of resistance to stepping that buffer up sometime in the future.
I agree. I thought about a 10-year review, 5-year review, something along that manner, that it be reviewed in, you know, as in light of, and maybe even tying it somehow or another to a multiplier of the state budget. But I'll leave that discussion forward, and I thought it was more appropriate in the Finance Committee than it was here, but yes, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, it's been 2 years making the bill referrals. These two items actually are kind of interesting because there's so many financial implications. You almost should send it to Finance first.
Right.
Have them put together the financial structure that they think they need, and then Judiciary reviews to see if it all looks constitutional or
right.
If it looks appropriate. So it could have gone either way, or the idea of having Judiciary look at it, Finance then do the work. If they add sections, Judiciary gets another look at it. It's not necessarily a bad idea.
So this may be one that we may request, and if your agreement, Mr. Senator Dyson, maybe as the sponsor, we may request that we have another chance to look at the constitutionality of it in the Judiciary Committee after the Finance Committee is done.
I would encourage you to seriously consider that. And parenthetically, I agree with Senator Terrio. I'm very wary of any escalators on the spending side. This one is a little different because it is the kind of the financial backup that our bonding ratings and all those sorts of things are dependent upon. So I'm less adverse to some kind of a thing. And part of the reason changing the Constitution is a very, very difficult process. And so if indeed at some point we find that $5 billion is way too much or not enough, you know, getting it back before the people and selling them on it. This one will be a bit easier to get people out to vote on and so on, because it has the appeal of a disciplining of our spending. I'm not sure, you know, how the folks will, how enthusiastic they'll be just about adjusting that level. Practical stuff.
The CBR seems to fulfill two functions in my estimation. One of them is it's a buffer for bad years, and the other is it's a cash flows account. And a certain amount of the balance in the CBR, it fluctuates right now based on cash flows.
And investments.
For the state. So there has to be an amount in there just to handle the cash flow variations of somewhere, I think, if I remember correctly, last year, around $1 billion that comes and goes. And then on top of that, have the buffer function that it was originally set out to do. Mr. Schultz.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to address two issues. One is you mentioned $1 billion. I believe the governor last year suggested that as a floor,
yep,
that would be the absolute minimum that we could should let it go to. So I think $5 billion is a nice gap between that. The other is that this bill does not limit the CBR to $5 billion. It limits repayment so that we can continue to receive earnings, oil settlements, or whatever, so they can grow to 8, 9, 10 billion, you know, if we want to be optimistic, from other sources. It's only the repayments that are diverted at $5 billion. So if it's 8 billion or 10 billion, it can grow. There's no limit there.
Was a discussion? Senator Frent?
I have several questions, really, that are sort of finance committee type of questions about the size of the growth, whether it's appropriate, how the repayment works, how likely it is. So I guess I'll defer those questions and either ask to sit in or submit them to one of the members and have those questions addressed there.
For the record, Senator Dyson, and for the members, it's my intent to watch these bills, and there's a high probability that we will ask for a second referral to the Judiciary Committee after Finance Committee is completed, both these. This committee's discussion closed on this bill. And what is the committee's will on the bill? Mr. Vice Chair?
Appears to me we're ready to move it.
All right. We have a motion from the Vice Chairman to move Senate Joint Resolution Number 4 out of committee with individual recommendations. And the fiscal note is a zero. Is there objection? Hearing none, Senate Joint Resolution Number 4 is on to the next committee referral. Tomorrow we will hopefully finalize Senate Joint Resolution Number 1. Other calendar items for tomorrow, Mr. Committee Aide?
That's it.
If we finish that, we will have finished way ahead of schedule tomorrow, and I do appreciate everyone's help and their patience with me this morning. I apologize for being late.
Thank you, John.
Maybe we can meet at 9 o'clock tomorrow, Mr. Chairman?
9 o'clock tomorrow. How's that?
It seems like we have a fairly right time.
Sounds a good time.
Suggestion?
9 o'clock tomorrow. This committee is adjourned.